You are listening to Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are. We now present the Catechism Hour, hosted by Brother Justin Bunyan.
Welcome to the Catechism Hour with me, Brother Justin Bunyan of the Heralds of the Gospel. And today we are going to continue to look into the cardinal virtues. I won't explain again what the cardinal virtues are because we've already spoken about three of them. We are going now into our final one, which I believe is going to end up being at least two shows because it's one that is seriously misunderstood, and I would say, in a sense, many people do not see what it is in there for themselves. And if they truly want to live a good life, they need this virtue. And this virtue is justice. What is justice? And when we get to justice, we have that big problem, which is, if we don't know what it is, well, we're not going to be able to explain how it touches our lives. So let's start with a brief explanation about the virtue of justice, and then from there we'll go and dig in a little deeper. So justice is a virtue that perfects the will. It is defined as constant, so it's not today on and tomorrow off, and perpetual will to render each its due. That's the key about justice. Justice is to give each its due. So the way in which you treat someone, do you give them their due? And if so, you're practicing the virtue of justice. So there are three types and or kinds of justice that correspond to the three basic relations in life and within society. As in each way, they reply to a certain type of debt that we may have. Firstly, the relation of one to another. This type of justice bears in this relationship. The second one would be between an individual person and the social society, the whole world. It is general justice, or you might say, even though I'm a little legalistic, legal justice. Thirdly, it's a social whole which related to the individual and is subject to this kind of debt. So this is the social justice that we talk so much about. That's the third form of justice. So the word justice comes from Latin, and that comes from a word called jus, J-U-S. And which means right. And that's why when you have legal questions, the right and justice, they're synonyms. They come from the same Latin root. So there's a right that is equal and a right that implies an equality under a certain form. If an unstate of affairs is made right, it means that a certain equality has been established. So when you say it's been made right, which means it's just now. It's better. It's done in a proper means. If you lend someone money, It is right for you to receive back what you lent. And that would be a second form of justice, cumulative justice. You have the right to receive your due, and the other has the obligation to render your due. And so where there is a right, there is a debt of sorts, an obligation on the part of someone else to establish a relationship of equality, that is, of equity, that is, of right. The just man is one who habitually wills such a relationship of equity. Always, constantly, consistently, and whenever. And whenever there's a debt or something wrong. So this is an idea about justice, where we are when we start talking about this virtue of justice. This is how we make our society good. This is how we make ourselves good. Do we live in a just society? So let's start with our first type. The just man is first and foremost a grateful person. Grateful. Where there is no gratitude, that is, there is no inability to say please and thank you, there is no justice. For an unjust man fails to see and to recognize the relationship of inequality between himself and someone else. He is blind, willfully blind. More specifically, he is unable to recognize, among many of the other things, that he has, particularly, something which he should be filled with gratitude for. He should be gracious towards others. He is under the impression that what he has been given was rightfully his from the very beginning. He operates under the general conviction that he is entitled, and nothing given him brings about a relationship of inequality, thereby creating a debt of gratitude, requiring him some sort of return. You know, this is a real problem in our society today, and you might say, you know, many people have discussed this with their dilemma with, you know, with the so-called millennial or post-millennial generations, and it's a sense of gratitude. We're not thankful. And why is it that we're such a crisis of religion? Why is it that people have a problem with anyone above them, any intercessors, anyone? It's because we're proud. This is the depths of this of the problem. But in this sense, where I got a bigger problem is that we have a problem with God. This idea about accepting our debt to each other and to God, in a sense, because we're not just, we lack it. The just man recognizes it. The unjust is convinced of his natural superiority over others. He is the center and absolute end, and when everyone else is a means to his personal ends. Pride. Pride. But the just man, the just one, on the other hand, recognizes his essential equality with other people. He does not believe he's entitled without qualification. He is able to recognize when something has been given to him without his having any strict right over it. He's able to recognize because he's open to seeing it when a specific behavior has created a degree of inequality between himself and another. So he wills to make return to the other to regularize and equalize the situation. Therefore, he is able to heartfeltly say the word, thank you. He's able to thank others. He is gracious towards others. He is filled with gratitude. Do we see the difference? Do we see why it's not just a case of teaching a child how to say please and thank you, but it's deeper in their formation to help them being just people? He has learned to be thoughtful. And also he thinks of ways to make things right, to correct errors. His heart is inflamed when he sees this lack of the right. In this light, we can see a relationship between justice and humility. Well, truly it can. For humility is bound up in the truth. That's what humility is. Humility isn't sweeping the ground with yourself. It's to accept what you truly are. And if we're able to accept who we truly are, then we're humble. We're grounded. And that's a big problem in our world today. A just man is first and foremost a grateful man. Let's keep that in mind. Because if you don't, then we end up having a whole problem of types. He does not hope inordinately in himself. How many people, their whole universe is themselves. They're boxed into themselves. And being boxed in, they become depressed with themselves. They become disheartened with themselves. I remember talking to one person, a horrible event had happened, and this person says to me, God can't forgive because I can't forgive. Who was the ruler of their lives? Themselves. So therefore, they have a problem. An unjust person cannot but be lacking in humility, for they perpetually and habitually will the relationship of inequality between themselves and others. They are convinced of their essential superiority. That's the proud person. He's God on earth. And there's his problem. He's the center of the universe. The basic falsehood and evil egoism lie not in the absolute self-consciousness and self-evaluation of the subject, but the fact that ascribing to themselves all justice in an absolute significance. You know what they've done to themselves? They've turned themselves into deities. How many proud people do you know? How many proud people are around us? How many times I myself am this? And that's what's important where we start from. We need to start weeding out this vice of pride within ourselves and begin to practice this virtue called justice. They recognize themselves as a center of life, which a matter of fact, they are to a certain extent. He regulates everything else to the circumferences of his own being and leaves them to the external values. No one else is important except me. And they live in this world of me. And then all of a sudden, they realize that they're not what they thought they were. And when that happens, disaster happens. It breaks down. And then the person sometimes can never put themselves back together again. Because to put themselves back together again were to recognize their lack of reality, that they're not the beginning, all, and end all of all things. Because a just person recognizes what they are in relation to others, and wills good on others, he will not do to others what he wills not to be done to himself. That's why our Lord gave that golden rule, is to help us along the way to the virtue of justice. We have to find a means where we do good. And in doing good, we'll receive good. But how much different would our world be if we live in a society where people looked at each other as a way of giving of themselves? They know that the other, as another self, as a person of the same nature, and has chosen to love the other. And that's the key, is to love, give of themselves. Give without cost. But you see, when you're humble, that's possible. He also sees that he has a moral debt to express himself truthfully. Truthfully, this is another key thing. To lie to another person is to will a relationship of inequality between equals. Only a person convinced of his essential superiority over others can constantly and willfully lie to them, deceive them, mislead them, manipulate them. To lie to a person is to exercise a type of lordship over them, a dominion, which is made out of smoke. It's not true. That's why when we lie, when we use God's name in vain, we use God as our witness when we tell a lie. It's such a grievous sin because we're called to truth. We're called to live reality in truth. Lying not only establishes a relationship of inequality between equals, but it also inflicts serious damage on the one who lies. We have to go back to the Greeks for this one here. Aristotle points out, our character is determined by our choosing good or evil, not by opinions we hold. Choosing good or evil. When we lie, what are we choosing? We're choosing evil. We're damaging our very character. We're damaging who we are to its foundations. The person who willingly establishes a relationship by lying becomes a person who cannot be trusted. He has become a liar. He makes himself less than he's capable of being. And for some temporal benefit, he allows a deficiency to mark his character. The habitual liar, the one who does not love equity, is a person who cannot really give his word because there is nothing in it, at least nothing that corresponds to what he really knows to be true. If there is anything in his word, such as truth, anything, he has emptiness. He does not have the habit of justice. He does not love justice, except possibly certain instances of justice that are conducive for his own private and self-serving means. But they're not necessarily just or ordered to the end and ultimate goal. Integrity, something we talk about so much in ethics, we talk about it in work relations, we talk about it in all types of things. And integrity is an intelligible human good of harmony, in which the various aspects of ourselves are in union. But the liar divides himself into, there are no correspondence between what is in his word and what is in him. That is, there's a separation between the content of his word and his own mind. Although truth is in his mind, it is not in his word. So there is a part of himself that is not in his words, namely the part that knows what is true. And this dichotomy, this splitting of self, always ends off badly. Now, I am my word. My word is an extension and expression of myself. So when I bring about this split between my word and my inner self, I bring a split within myself. I fragment myself. My act leads to a disintegration of myself rather than a greater integrity. We want, as Christians, to be integral. Our Lord was integral. The Trinity is integral. All of this that we look towards that is good are integral. When there is this lie, it breaks into pieces. And when that happens, nothing good can happen. So we're going to go for a break. And then we come back. We're going to continue looking at the virtue of justice. We'll be back in a quick moment's time.
Laudate Deo, Patris.
You are listening to the Catechism Hour, here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice, wherever you are. To contact us, you can tweet us at Radio Maria Can or email catechismhour@radiomaria.ca.
Welcome back. Let's continue looking at the virtue of justice and how it has strict relations with ourselves and building up in ourselves this monolith of Christianity within ourselves, and how we're avoiding this breaking, this fractionization of ourselves. Through sin, we break ourselves also, but sin is a very generic word. So we're looking at the particular cracks which take apart that granite, which is our soul. So as I already said, I am my word. My word is an extension and expression of myself. So when I split my word and my inner self, we have that image very clear. Okay, let's continue. In lying, I gradually lead myself downward towards a pseudo-form state of mental illness. That is, towards a divided self. I end up becoming a spiritual bipolar or schizophrenic. Because I know truth and I deny truth. And I don't know anymore what's true and what's not true. And when that happens, nothing good can come from it. There are all sorts of motives for lying, none of which can and will justify it. By lying, might have a charm of its own. It might make me feel appealing. One who lies has something that no one else has. That is, he knows something the others do not. There is something that belongs only to him and that no one can take away because others are not even aware that they don't have it and that they've been deceived. Thus, one who lies has created a space that is his own and no one can invade. This provides, in some last degree at last, a feeling of power over others, a feeling of being in control. But there's a price to the creation of the space. And what it is, namely, is the disintegration of your character. Because lying involves a splitting of self, it creates a distinct and distance between myself and I. As I continue to lie, which is inevitable since we create habits, we already spoke about this in the past, habits, bad acts that we do consistently, we gradually lose ourselves. And at some point, perhaps after years, I may lose myself. And I am so far aware, and I'm not aware of it anymore. At this point, I can lie to myself and even believe my own lies. The Russian novelist, famous for his works on morality, Dostoevsky, speaks of this particular state of affairs in the great novel, The Brothers Karamazov. A man lies to himself, believes his own lies, becomes unable to recognize truth, either in himself or in others. He ends up losing respect for himself as well as for the others. When he has no respect for anyone, he can no longer love. And in order to divert himself, having love for no one, including himself, he yields to his impulses. He indulges in the lowest forms of pleasure and behaves, in the end, like an animal to satisfy his basest vices. And in it, all comes from lying, lying to others, lying to oneself. A man who lies to himself, for instance, can take offense whenever he wishes, for there are times when it is rather pleasant to feel wronged. Don't you agree? So a man may know very well that no one has offended him, may invent an offense, lie, just for the beauty of it, to exaggerate that someone said to create a situation, making a mountain out of a molehill. And although he is well aware of himself, he nevertheless does not feel offended because he enjoys doing so. He derives great pleasure from it. He comes to feel real hostility towards the imaginary offender. The one who lies becomes unable to recognize the truth because he violates the truth for the sake of the useful. He has become a pragmatist. His criterion for moral truth has become the useful, the practical. And that the liar gradually loses respect for himself as well as for others is not hard to show. For lack and loss of respect for oneself is part and parcel of every vice. The reason is that evil is a privation of being, privation of ourselves. What is evil lacking is the fullness of being. Goodness is the fullness of being. Accordingly, an evil action is lacking something which he ought to have. Now, justice is in the will, and so injustice involves a deficient will. But we are what we will, and so an unjust man is a deficient man. I cannot love deficiency, I can only love the good. So the more I commit acts of injustice, such as lying, the less there is in me to love. Thus, the more I loathe myself. How many liars have we known in our lives who loathe themselves? And their lives are full of lies, and they end up falling into depression because of this. So horrible. And if lying establishes an inequality between myself and the person whom I'm lying, then I can only lose respect for that person, since I have made him or her less than myself, whom I have begun to loathe already. There is no circumstances that can change the nature of a lie, rendering it a good action. Under normal circumstances, there is a moral debt to express oneself truthfully to others in speaking and writing. If we have the duty to withhold information from others, and that's known as mental reservation, at least we have a duty not to lie to them. To lie is to violate the requirement to treat others in a way that respects their status as people equal in dignity to ourselves. So lying is against justice. And I hope this is very clear. So our next point we're going to look at is the ethics of killing and double effect. Human life is a basic, intelligible human good, not an instrumental good. Human person is the crown of the physical universe and willed into existence by God for his own sake. There is a sense in which he is a part of the social whole, but the human person is not related to the social whole, like a kidney or some other organ related to the whole physical organism. For kidneys, the heart, lungs, are nothing but parts, not a whole substance unto themselves. The human person is a whole unto himself, not merely a part of the social whole. An unrational animal is a whole substance unto itself, but it does not exist for its own sake, but for the sake of other human goods. Non-rational animals are not moral agents and are not measured by the obligation of justice, and thus they are not subjects of rights. An animal does not have the right not to be killed by another animal, whether the same species or not, nor does it have the right not to be killed by a man because of moral agency. A cougar stalks its prey, eats it. He's not a murderer. A cougar might kill another cougar, might eat another cougar. Not a cannibal. Why? Because of this very point. Man, on the other hand, is a subject of right, of justice. Through the power of self-reflection, we know our existence as a good in itself and for itself, and we love our own existence for its own sake. We naturally will to be treated as an end. That is, we naturally desire to be loved for our own sake. We object to being used. The thought of being evaluated merely as a basis of how useful we are to another is it repugnant. We judge this contrary to our dignity as persons to be loved on our own sake. In other words, human life is intrinsically good, and we readily see this in our own case. To murder someone is to will that he or she not be. But a human person is intrinsically good, not a good relative to me or my personal ends. To will that what is intrinsically good, namely a person who is my equal, not to be set one's will against what is humanly or intrinsically good, such is an evil will. It is precisely this relationship between the will and the human person, when it bears down upon the differences between murder and killing. A dog, for example, is not capable of murder because a dog does not have a will, only a sensitive appetite. A dog can only kill. In a man's case, not every act that leads to death of a person is murderous. For example, a woman picks up a metal bar, swings it in order to stop someone who is approaching with wielding a knife with evident intent to kill her, is not necessarily acting with murderous intent should her action lead to the attacker's death. What is intended or willed is the swinging of the metal bar that is to have that attacker stopped, not killed. We have a duty to try to stop the attacker. Because our life is intrinsically good and ought to be protected. We even use lethal force to stop an attacker. We're often the only way to disarm an aggressor who holds a victim in his grip and a gun to its head is to shoot them in the back of the head. To do this is not necessarily to involve one in willing his death, even though one knows that death is virtually inevitable. There is a fundamental difference between intending an effect and accepting an effect. And its undesirable consequences to an otherwise good action. A few simple examples can help us with this. It is inevitable that the more we drive, the more our tires will be worn. The more we use our cars, the more the car may break down. We don't will this or intend it, but we do accept it as an inevitable fact of life. Matter has a natural propensity to change. Separating Siamese twins might very well lead to the death of one of the twins, but choosing to proceed with the operation does not necessarily involve a person in willing the death of the twin that dies. The surgeon may very well accept the death of one twin as an undesirable result of the surgery without intending their death. But, and this is where things change, aborting a child in the womb does involve the intention to destroy it. That is why the abortionist is going in with his forceps to clamp onto the child, to tear it apart so that it's no longer will be. Such an action is murderous. We see the intention. Consider the difference between the action and the action of clamping down on the artery of the fallopian tube during an ectopic pregnancy. What does the surgeon intend to do? So, he intends to prevent hemorrhaging, but this action at the same time kills the developing human life in the fallopian tube. There is not something he wills or intends, but it is something he accepts as inevitable, an undesirable side effect of a certain medical procedure. Now, it should be pointed out that it does not follow that just because an action does not involve an intention to do evil, only the acceptance of the evil effect, that the action is morally justified. Before one may proceed with an act that has a good effect and an evil effect, a number of conditions must be placed. These are known as the rules of double effect. Firstly, the action to be formed must be good, or at least morally indifferent. Two, one must not positively will an evil effect, only permit it or allow it. Three, the good effect must proceed from the action and not from the effect. Otherwise, one would be doing evil that good may come of it. And finally, the good effect must be significantly desirable, a good enough to compensate for permitting the evil. The fourth condition is most important. There ought to be certain proportion between the good and evil effect. It is justified for a police officer to use his gun on a boy threatening him with a slingshot? I don't think so. The good effect is that the officer will save himself from a possible black eye. Ought he to accept the possible death of the child for the sake of the effect? Clearly not. So we have to have great differences between the two points. A little boy runs after you with a stick. You pull out a shotgun. No, that doesn't make sense. Moreover, we ought to be careful when employing the word proportionate in the context of ethics. This is a huge discretion and discussion on the question of ethics proportionate. The reason is that some philosophers have developed a theory of morality called proportionalism, and that is inconsistent with the principles of prudence. The typical proportionalist holds that one may do evil to achieve good, as long as the good resulting from the act is proportionate to the evil being done. This is, however, not what we are advocating here. One must and may never do evil that good may come of it. for you are what you choose. By choosing evil as a means, one becomes an evil character, at least in part. Consider the case, and I'm going to close with this today, of Saint Gianna Molla. Towards the end of her second month of her pregnancy, it was discovered that she had developed a defect in her uterus. Would it be justified for her to have an abortion, as it was recommended to her, in order to save her own life? Certainly not in her mind. And certainly not according to the principles of natural law. Her case is not a double effect scenario. The good effect might be sufficiently desirable to compensate for allowing the evil effect, but aborting a child is not a case of allowing a child to die, but it is rather a case of making a baby die by abortion, which includes willing and intending its death. It is to do evil that good may result. Saint Gianna Molla was ready to give her life for her child. And I quote, "If you must decide between me and the child, do not hesitate. Choose the child," I insisted. "Save him." 7 days after the birth of her child, Gianna Molla was dead. The virtue of justice, the more we dig into it, the more we perceive that it's difficult. But the more that it makes us more human, makes us more of what we are called to be. We're called not to be cracked stone that has these fissures cracking to its foundations. We are called to be monoliths, monoliths of truth, monoliths of integrity. We're called to be integral people. And in being integral people, we're called to this greater, which is to be other Christs. Christ was integral. Even his enemies, we find this in the Gospels, couldn't accuse him of hypocrisy when he called them hypocrites. Could not find anything to throw on him, except for the fact that he was merciful. And he was just, and he was good. And they didn't like the various elements of his doctrine, but they couldn't condemn him for it. So for ourselves, we are called to a life of justice. And our next show, we're going to continue in it, and we're going to be touching some other subjects, namely the general justice or legalistic justice of the human person, what is personhood, and then the question of social justice. But we're going to begin, actually, at one point, which is can be touchy in our world that we live in today, which is adultery. Because adultery is a sin against justice again. So there's justice is so much. There's so much to it. And there's so many pieces that when we say, I want to practice the cardinal virtue of justice, I want to practice the cardinal virtue of prudence, do we know what it is? And hopefully this will give us an opportunity to begin to examine ourselves and to pluck out those deficiencies, those holes, those fissures, fill them up so we become once again what we're called to be as integral people, not broken, not shattered. And in that brokenness, we can crawl back to God and confess our sin, but also in confessing, reaching out to him on the cross. Though he was broken, he brought us salvation. So justice is key. We look in the litany of the Sacred Heart. We look in the litanies of Our Lady. And justice comes up several times. Mirror of justice is a term for Our Lady. But our Lord has many more. So let's look at it, pray it, and also look within ourselves to make sure that we're not abysses of lies and injustice. And that we actually truly do what we're supposed to do in our lives. Not just because others will say things, but because when we die, we face Christ, the judge, the just judge, who will judge us according to our actions, according to our things that we did through thought, word, deed, and omission. And either will say to us, come to the heavenly kingdom, or be gone from me, I do not know who you are. So, we'll continue our next episode on the same subject, but it's interesting for you to do your own reading. We're quoted from the book by Donosky, which is The Brothers. And The Brothers is a fabulous book. It's a little depressing because there's the good guy who's kind of an idiot, and then there's the bad guy who is filled with lies. Everything's a lie. And unfortunately, when we study that book, normally people find themselves broken between the two characters. And in that brokenness, it makes for a very good discussion. So if you're looking for a book to read this period of time, you might want to pick up Brothers, give it a read, and apply the principles that we've been going through today onto the characters. And you'll end up having a very, very great conversation. So, with that said, hopefully may God help us all. And when we get back next episode, we'll continue that drilling in deep to figure out what is social justice and who is the social and who are we being just to. So may God bless you, and we'll be back next time. God bless.
You have been listening to the Catechism Hour, hosted by Brother Justin Bonnion, here on Radio Maria Canada, a Catholic voice wherever you are.